Hour two of the Blitz starting now. Charlie Collier, Andy Brock, Sam Beard back behind the board. Live on 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. We're also live in your Fan Run Radio app. And you can watch us live. I don't think it's called Periscope anymore, but just the video feed on Twitter and on Facebook if you want to see our smiling faces. Go ahead and download that FanRun Radio app, too. I'm going to keep telling you every day, but it's free. You can take us with you on the go. That way you already have us when you need us, when you're not just, you know, local. So go ahead and get that FanRun Radio app free in all app stores. But, hey, let's get hour two started with an opening drive. First down. The Carolina Panthers are expected to name Baker Mayfield their starting quarterback against the Cleveland Browns for week one of the 2022 season, sources told The Athletic. Matt Rhule had him and Sam Darnold compete for a job for a little bit. Felt like a weird quarterback competition to have just in general since, you know, you went out and traded for Baker Mayfield. Clearly, he's the better quarterback than Sam Darnold. You benched Sam Darnold, started him, and, like, benched him again last year. At one point, you benched him for, you know, free agent Cam Newton. Did you start P.J. Walker at some point last year? Maybe. I don't know. They did a lot of weird things with their quarterback because, well, clearly Sam Darnold was not a very good one. So, to me, it seemed like they kind of just wasted some time putting them through a meaningless quarterback competition when Baker could have used that time to acclimate a little bit quicker. But week one, Baker Mayfield
gonna be so good
against the Browns. I'm going to so bet good. So much on Baker Mayfield and on the Panthers. I'm probably going to just pick up Baker Mayfield in fantasy too for week one just to start him in that game.
Because
I don't
game.
See
ultimate revenge game.
I don't see any scenario where he throws for less than 400 yards and four touchdowns. that's just the kind of guy he is. You know, it's like the circle of Baker. People doubt Baker Mayfield. People, you know, Baker Mayfield plays with a chip on his shoulder, proves him wrong. People overhype Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield disappoints. You know, it's an endless circle. And right now, we're very clearly in the people doubting Baker Mayfield. Giant chip on his shoulder, and he gets to go against the team that dropped him after all he did for them. I'm really excited.
Good storylines. Watch out for Matt Corral, though. He's sneaking up on the background. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a little Corral.
Did you see the game-winning drive he had?
I did not.
It was one of the most unique game-winning drives ever. I think he had like two scrambles for 6 yards and didn't complete a pass.
That's perfect.
But there were like three penalties and like 6 yards of scrambling was enough to get them in field goal range for the game-winning field goal.
Love it. Yeah, Matt Corral. I love him as a third string. That's a good third string.
I'm a big fan of Matt Corral personally. He was another guy I did really like in this.
Draft class.
Quarterback cycle.
Wow. Some news just popped up on the Twitter timeline that we'll use for third down that caught my eye. But Andy, you can go ahead and hit us with second down.
All right, second down. LeBron James and the Lakers yesterday came to a 2-year, $97.1 million deal with the third year player option included, and will now officially make LeBron the highest earning player in NBA history, surpassing Kevin Durant at that point in terms of career guaranteed money when it's all said and done. So LeBron is at this point approaching 38 years old. This will carry him into at least his 40th year. Obviously has that player option. And I think the ultimate desire of that is so he can play with Bronny, who is projected to be eligible for the NBA draft in 2024. So this kind of locks up that we could see LeBron James and Bronny play together. Obviously it depends on where he's drafted to.
So 2 years in L.A., and then Bronny's drafted right that offseason.
Yep, so you got two more years in an extension with L.A.
The 2 years are up, he just goes wherever Bronny goes.
And it's a swan year. He has the Dwayne Wade season where, you know, everyone does the jersey swaps.
Right.
Everyone gives him a big ovation. We have that, and he's with Bronny the whole time.
I'm so excited for someone to just draft LeBron James Jr.
Just
or
to
Bronny
commit,
James
yeah.
in, like, the top 10 just to get LeBron.
It would feel weird, though, if LeBron did his farewell tour on, like, any other team beside, like, the Cavs or the Heat or the Lakers, though. Like, if he was just doing his farewell tour with, like, the Nuggets.
Yeah, but it's a very real possibility because teams aren't going to be like, well, you know, let's just let one of them draft Bronny. I think that's better for the storylines. That's better for, you know.
No, exactly.
It's more like, poetic that way. Like, if I'm the Sacramento Kings, I'm reaching 20, 30 picks above where he should be drafted just to actually be relevant for the first time, you know, since you got screwed out of the Western Conference Finals in like 2001 or whatever year that was. Like,
the Kings are the name that immediately popped up in my head. It's just the random team that like, LeBron
should go to. Give me Bronny, because then I get LeBron, and then I get whoever LeBron brings with him.
Then you also have that distraction a little bit. Like, if you're actually seriously trying to compete and you draft Bronny, then you have a whole farewell tour going on. Like, if Bronny is like a late first rounder.
Can you imagine, though, all the LeBron Kings jersey swaps? Like, there's just gonna be a group of NBA veterans that all are gonna have LeBron James Sacramento King jerseys
but
on their wall from his farewell year.
He is King James, so that could be that. Kind
the
of
king,
poetic.
Okay, the king on the Kings.
I'm starting to like that a lot better.
That makes too much sense now. I need him to be.
But it's like if Bronny went to what's the most random team you can think of right now?
Well, I think it was the Kings,
like the Wizards, or like the Nuggets, Trailblazers.
Pistons. Give me LeBron on the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's like one. It's going to be. LeBron has obviously stated, like, that's what his, like, final frontier. Like, he wants to play with Bronny. So he's going to try to make it happen as much as he can, but it's just going to feel weird.
Third down. Here is the news that. That made me get distracted during first down.
I'm not seeing it.
Tennessee football, 7 minutes ago, just tweeted out. They changed their profile pic, too. It looks pretty good. But they tweeted out Smokey Gray series.
Ooh.
As the OG Smokey Gray uniforms are set to return for 2022.
Nice.
I don't know what exactly we're considering the OG. Are we, like, going to try to mimic the...
Ones, like, you know, were in 2016 when Juwan Jennings caught the ball down the sideline to be Florida. Those.
I mean, technically, OG should be, like, the Adidas ones, but, you know, we're not going to recreate those. So the OG, the original Nike ones, they will return for this year. And then three new. This is the part that I find really interesting that, you know, I wasn't expecting to see because I think there were a lot of people that thought we might see the Smoking Grays return this year. I mean, I think Hype would even hinted at that at some point, but... Three new Smokey Gray designs are set to debut in subsequent seasons, 2023,
cool.
2024, 2025. So kind of like what the Miami Heat did with their Miami Vice jerseys, for example, how they had, you know, the three different designs in three consecutive years, and then they tied it all together. You know, Tennessee, they're going to do three different Smokey Gray designs, 2023, 2024, 2025, with each design honoring Tennessee's unique tradition and innovative identity.
I am so happy. I feel like I just got stabbed and I was bleeding out after that Big Ten took my jingle from me.
This is back.
And then I get news that the Smokey Grays are back
and I just got
revived. I'm back.
You let go and then you receive. One comes back.
The only thing that could be better is just seeing Tennessee in the Smokey Grays as the jingle is playing.
Yeah,
but
we're gonna get that this year. We're gonna get one more.
You can't get anything.
The question is, what game is it debuted for this year? What game?
We do not have an answer to that yet. You got to think it's gonna be Florida, right?
Florida.
I mean,
because you don't.
You typically
you
want to
do it for a big game, but one that you think you can win. So not Alabama.
It's hard to do the gimmicks against Bama.
And I guess you could do it for Kentucky, but like. You know, you were going to do the black jerseys against Kentucky a couple years back before that fell apart. So I guess maybe you consider that a big enough game, too. I mean, they're going to be ranked higher than Florida when you play them, presumably.
Well, they'll also do the dark mode jerseys for sure.
Yeah, but I was going to say, like, they're going to do the dark mode jerseys. That Kentucky game is October 29th. I feel like it would make a lot more sense to do it then. So I think you're going to get Smokey Gray for Florida. I think there's also a pretty decent chance that... You know, Tennessee's on CBS that weekend. When you look at
the Florida game, they haven't announced that one. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because That week, the only games are set in stone are Kent State, Georgia, and New Mexico, and LSU, and those are
plus games.
Yeah, those are the plus games. So you look at that week, you have Florida, Tennessee, you have Vandy, Alabama, you have Northern Illinois, Kentucky, Tulsa, Ole Miss, Missouri, Auburn, Bowling Green, Mississippi State, and Charlotte, South Carolina. None of those games are going to take the 330 spot. So it's between you and A&M and Arkansas. Yeah. So that's what I was getting to. It's between you and A&M and Arkansas,
But that one's always at noon. Well, that
right?
one's at I don't know
because they play it at Jerry World. Maybe it's just it just ha-
that
so
feels
happens.
Like a CBS 330 game at AT&T Stadium in Arlington.
But they play that every year at Jerry World. But I feel like it is always at noon.
It could
maybe
be.
It's not, and it's just like conveniently or coincidentally been at noon a couple years in a row, and that's why I have that in my head.
I think either way, though, you can guarantee at least 3:30 or 7 o'clock.
Yeah, so like you're at the very least going to get a big spot there,
it's gonna be a
TV
prime time
wise,
slot.
And I imagine that you're going. That I mean, the levels in Neyland Stadium, unless you lose to Pitt, if you're undefeated, Neyland Stadium is going to be Ole Miss last year. Florida 2016 and like Oklahoma type vibes for that game.
I think even if you lose to Pitt, it's not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world, but I don't think it'll be like the exact same level of energy. But if you're undefeated,
different, but
we're exercising some demons that game. We're wearing the smoky grays. We're going to pack in Neyland and we're going to exercise some demons on national television.
Yeah, I love the move.
So I'm very excited for the smoky gray, and I'm a huge jersey guy too. Like, I'm obsessed with jerseys, really, and just in the different designs and intricacies. So I'm really pumped to just see the three different unique designs that eventually come out too. And what basically this guaranteed is that Tennessee is going to get roughly $200 from me a year for 3 years in a row, because I'll either get a jersey or like whatever, some sort of new apparel that is associated with each different smoky design, because I have to. But like you said, Sam, I couldn't have said it better myself. It is just kind of like that pick me up after CBS stabbed you in the back.
We're back.
Everything's good now.
Everything
took us like we could take a deep breath. We can remember it's just 14 days away. We're good. All is right in the world.
Yeah.
Andy,
fourth down. Pirates Rodolfo Castro suspended for one game by the MLB for his phone falling out of his pocket while sliding. One of the more interesting stories to come out of baseball this week. 23-year-old rookie, from his opinion, just an honest mistake. He had his sliding gloves in his pants, and I think he just forgot he had his cell phone in there, and it just came flying out of his pockets as he was sliding into third. Obviously, the MLB has to take this extremely seriously with all, the cheating scandals from the Astros. You know, Red Sox and Yankees have been caught up in some stuff, too. I mean, you got to be really careful when you see a device flying out of people's pockets. Now, for one, it's the Pirates, so it's like if they're using these devices, it's not really working too well. But obviously, I think a lot of MLB executives were like, hey, if you don't come down with the punishment here, like, what are you telling the rest of the teams? Like, you can just have your cell phone in your pocket. So it sparked a little bit of a debate. The rookie was just like, it was just a bad mistake. One game, not harsh. I think you can take that, but it's just a really funny suspension for having your phone play out.
Funniest part to me is the way the reaction, both like nationally and from the MLB, because it is just a nationally, no disrespect to him, but like nationally rather irrelevant rookie on an irrelevant bottom feeding team. In terms of the national major league storylines.
Yeah, you're trying to make a name for yourself. That's the wrong way to do it.
It's a funny video that gets tweeted out on like Barstool when it's a Pirates rookie that no one cares about. Could you imagine if this is like a Yankees player or like an Astros player or a Dodgers player or just a big time player?
That's a different level.
Then all of a sudden it's like a 10-game suspension and like people calling you a cheater for the next year and a half.
And that's why I think multiple executives were like, all right, we gotta do, like, something has to be
like
done.
I guess we'll give him a game.
Yeah.
But it's funny to me how differently it's handled, because it's just the Pirates. Like, I almost feel like the Pirates could just get away with cheating.
I mean, if they're using that cell phone, they're not using it in the right way. It's not working.
It probably should be cheating, to be honest with you.
Just give it a go.
Yeah,
give it. Like, what do they really do to the Astros? Like, oh, sorry, you lose your coach for a year, and like some mad Yankees fans are going to bang on trash cans in spring training, but you still got your rings. You're still a really good team.
I think that's like the top headline if that's an Astros player and his phone slides out of his pocket. It's just the fact that he plays for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's just, they're like, oh, okay. He had his phone. He plays for the Pirates. He's probably just bored.
He's probably trying to schedule his Uber back home since the Pirates are like too cheap. I don't know. I think the Pirates should start cheating, though. I think that's the main conclusion here, is that I want them begging trash cans and stealing signs. I want them hacking into the PitchCom data and relaying it to a little buzzer on someone's thigh.
It's not okay if the Astros do it, but if the Pirates do it, we're letting it slide.
Honestly, if the Pirates cheated for a year and got into
like the wild card, they could go.
Got into the wild card and like maybe advanced into the second round of the playoffs,
it would at least show, we found out show they, some initiative.
We found out that they were cheating. How mad would you actually be?
I mean, I don't think I'd be happy about it.
I don't think I'd be happy about it, but I'd be like, should be happy about man. It. Those
the one
darn
thing
is, Pirates.
It's like, at least they showed some initiative. They're really trying.
At some point, you got to respect them for being a poverty franchise and trying to dig themselves out of that hole a little bit.
O'Neill Cruz, 70 home run season.
Well, that's a different story. If he's hit 70 home runs, he might have a Fernando Tatis story
he's
on
just
his hands.
He's juiced and knows every pitch coming. And I honestly, just 1 year. We tell him you can't cheat for 2 years, but we'll let you cheat for 1 year in the next three and see what happens. I'm in. Give him some spider attack, too. Just anything to make him a little bit more fun.
Just to close the gap.
But long opening drive there. Pumped about the new Tennessee uniforms. Can't wait to watch Baker whoop up on the Browns. And speaking of the Browns, hey, we'll talk a little AFC North on the other side. Stay with us here on the Blitz. Talking a little AFC North as we continue our daily divisional preview. And I mean, I know we talk about the AFC West as the most loaded division in football, and rightfully so, but the AFC North, pretty, pretty loaded as well. You have, you know, a team in the Browns that has a loaded roster. A lot of questions about the quarterback position, obviously, as we still kind of waited a final ruling on Deshaun Watson. You have the Ravens, who are the favorite to win that division, who have a quarterback who's won an MVP, and you know, a lot of people have high expectations for them again this year after, you know, an injury-riddled season kind of went off the tracks a year ago. And you have Joe Cool and the coolest team in the NFL right now with the Bengals, who are coming off a surprise Super Bowl run. And then you have a Steelers team that just wins games. I don't really know how sometimes, but they just win games. I mean, they're just always going to be right there. And now they're rolling out a new quarterback. So with the Ravens being the favorite, do you think that's fair that they're the favorite? You know, are they your favorite to win this division, Andy?
I think they are my favorite to win it. I don't know if it's fair that they are the favorite. I feel like, you know, the consensus would have been the Bengals, considering they went to the Super Bowl, they'd come back and be the favorite. But I do think that's easy just to sit there and say they went to the Super Bowl, they should be the favorite. I think the Ravens are the more talented team than the Bengals, and it is hard. Sometimes you see those Super Bowl teams come back, and they're just not near as good as they were that last year. You know, people start figuring out the book on that Bengals offense. You haven't really upgraded the offensive line as much as you probably should. You're still waiting to sign your star safety back. So I think there's just a lot of more questions with the Bengals, I guess. In the Ravens, I feel like their defense has stayed pretty much the same. I think Lamar Jackson being in this contract year situation, it kind of turned to an awkward phase right before the year, and I think now he's going to have something to prove, trying to earn a contract, trying to earn a spot in which, you know, what he thinks he's probably a top five quarterback in the league, borderline top 10 really. But I think for him it's going to be a lot of, hey, he's going to try to show out and earn that contract, and I feel like they can put it together and he can utilize some of those weapons. And I know we saw some hit or miss weeks from Lamar, but I feel like the Ravens should be the technical favorite. But it's going to be so close. I mean, these teams were all within what, two games of each other last year. It's just how it always is when they go head to head. It's just usually a dogfight, and it usually comes down to at least a game or two because everyone's just so competitive.
Yeah, I understand why the Ravens are the favorite, but they are by no means my favorite. you know, I just, when it comes to Lamar Jackson, I think we've already seen the best he will be as a quarterback. Like, I think his peak was earlier in his career before, you know, teams really started to have a book on him a little bit. And, you know, I thought, you know, this year and last year both, I guess, are big years for him to prove that, you know, he has the ability to then counter what teams are doing to him, you know, that he can grow as a passer, that he can, you know, change his style of play to still be successful and still utilize his skill set. You know, I thought last year he didn't do it well, but he also dealt with a lot of injuries around him. I think that the book is out on Lamar to an extent on how to limit him, you know, how to limit him as a runner. And once you're limiting him as a runner and forcing him to be a passer, then you take what makes him a top 10 quarterback away. So I'm not a huge believer in Lamar at all. I mean, you look at really from that Dolphins game on, the Dolphins just went cover zero, cover zero, cover zero. And, you know, defenses that have done that to him and been able to contain him and force him to make those quick throws and beat you have been successful. Teams that have run, you know, really cover three is the only thing that he's been able to really be successful about, because, you know, because he can just hit all those short throws in that 10, 15-yard range. And, you know, that's when the tight end becomes the biggest factor, too. Like, beating that cover three, you have a guy like Mark Andrews as an elite tight end, and you can be successful against that. But, you know, I think he's very system-dependent. I mean, last year, 13 picks in 12 games. Like, that to me is not a quarterback that can lead you deep into the playoffs or lead you to a Super Bowl. Like, that's not good. And that's not to say that Lamar Jackson – I'm not trying to say that he's a bad quarterback. I'm just – you know, until he shows that he can mold his game to counter what now defenses will throw at him, I just don't think he can lead a team far in a crowded division.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the concerns with, like, you know, getting the book out, limiting his run, making him throw the ball, because he's not going to be a better thrower than Joe Burrow in this division.
Right.
But I think he has – I know he's lost Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown is gone, but I feel like you stay healthy, you have your running back room at a full strength again, you kind of open up the doors for that. You have Dobbins back. I feel like that makes the offense a little bit more potent to where he can be a little bit more crafty.
I mean, it does. And, like, you know, the Ravens, to me, are the best team-building franchise really in the NFL over a long-term, you know, period. The Ravens are so good at building a roster. They're so good at playing to the strengths of their personnel and building a system around, you know, those players. Like, I think the Ravens do an incredible job. Their front office is awesome. But as good as that roster is, that receiver room still, to me, with Rashad Bateman, like Devin Duvernay, and James Proche, the third, like, or the second, excuse me, being your three receivers, to me, Lamar Jackson isn't a good enough passer to elevate those guys to a level of play necessary to compete, or, you know, to win this division. They'll compete to win this division, obviously, but to win it, I just don't see that receiver room being good enough, especially, you know, with two running backs, that one's still on the pup list with Gus Edwards and the other, J.K. Dobbins. You know, it took him a pretty long time to recover, so you don't know how much, you know, if he'll be 100% right from the get-go either. You know, the defense, they're back healthy, obviously, and that should be a really good defense. You added in Kyle Fuller, too. Like, you added in Marcus Williams. Like, it's a good defense. It's a very good defense, and with a defense like that, you're going to be in almost every game. And with Lamar Jackson at quarterback and some of the playmaking ability that he has, like, you're going to be in every game too. But it's going to be, like you said, a really tight division. And I just don't think Lamar can be that difference maker to ultimately put them on top. To me, the Ravens feel like a more like a wild card team, a team right there that's in the hunt that maybe gets one of those last couple wild card spots in a very competitive AFC, maybe doesn't, but they're like a game or two above 500.
Yeah. See, my thing is just like, I don't feel like Lamar has to be like the superhero he once was like 3 years ago. I think Rashad Bateman takes a step up and he's going to be
a really good target.
And you have Mark Andrews, who's one of the best tight ends in the NFL. So I think you're fine in that regard. And I'm sure someone else will emerge in there, because I think you obviously do need that other piece. But I also don't think, with just how solid the defense might be in those pieces you added that you mentioned, I feel like you don't have to be as illustrious as you once were. And I feel like having that contract year looming on him, wanting to get paid, I feel like that might add a little more incentive to be a bit smarter as well. So I just feel like I don't know. I don't know what kind of pressure he's putting on himself about this year, but I feel like he doesn't have to be kind of the Lamar Jackson. He can kind of reinvent himself in a way. Like he doesn't have to be the guy rushing for 100 yards a game. He can be smarter. And you have knowing you have a good defense behind you.
But like that's what makes him that's like what makes him different though. Like that's what sets him apart is his rushing ability. So if he's doing that less and passing more, then that sounds like trouble for me for the Ravens. But if it's not the Ravens, who is it? Because you have three other really good choices, obviously. I mean, the Bengals coming off of the Super Bowl.
I assume you're going with the Bengals.
I'm not. Okay. I'm not going with the Bengals either. All right. Feel like they're due for a regression.
I do too. I just didn't know who else you were going to pick.
It feels like the Bengals just got ahead of their rebuild ever so slightly last year, and now I think their rebuild will get back to on track.
The pressure is
on.
Which
isn't a bad spot to be if you're the Bengals, but just to think that you can recreate that Super Bowl run, like your roster isn't quite there yet. They still haven't addressed the offensive line as much as they probably should have. And, you know, as fun as Joe Burrow is, like there's still a little bit more room for his game to grow too. And you know, last year, it was Joe Burrow that we were all loving, and rightfully so. I love me some Joe Burrow, too. But he was not the driving factor in that playoff run, in my opinion. You know, in that Raiders game, it was the defense, and it was Evan McPherson making field goals. It was, you know, the defense being opportunistic and forcing turnovers. It was an inadvertent whistle that messed with the Raiders. In the Titans game the next week, it was... Again, it was Evan McPherson with roughly 47 field goals, and it was Ja'Marr Chase, you know, having one big play, really. And other than that, the defense being opportunistic again and you know, creating turnovers and doing just enough. And that Chiefs game, even, again, it was just an opportunistic defense that really shut down the Chiefs in the second half. Like, I don't know. Like the offense still has some room to grow when they're playing other top-level teams, and now you're going to be playing a tougher schedule because you did win that division. I still think the Bengals will be a good team this year. I think all four teams in this division, you know, aren't going to be worse than like one or two games under 500. But someone's going to win it, and I think it's going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I mean, that has to be the other option, I guess. I'm interested in why. Is it just because they haven't been under 500 since 2003? Is that the reason?
I mean, that's part of
reason?
It. You know, I think that is part of it. You feel confident that they're going to win some games. But this is a team that has a very good defense. You know, the best defender in football, arguably, if you are lean T.J. Watt over, you know, Aaron Donald at this point in terms of production or over Myles Garrett. I would still take Aaron Donald as a better player, but T.J. Watt a little bit more productive just because he, you know, at times, I guess, from a sack perspective, can be more productive because, you know, teams can't put as much attention on him as they do Aaron Donald. So, I mean, you have T.J. Watt, like you have a really good defense. You have Cameron Hayward, like you have Devin Bush and Miles Jack now added into that. You added Larry Ogunjobi into the fold too. It's a secondary that's pretty solid all around with, you know, Cam Sutton playing a nice role there and Minka Fitzpatrick in that secondary as well. That defense is elite.
I don't know. I feel like last year, though, it was like kind of the first time where their defense like wasn't that good.
I mean, there were times they got exposed.
Like, and that kind of is like worrying because they've always been like that steel curtain team. And it was like last year was like they didn't have that grit that they normally do.
But they also, I think, they dealt with some injuries too. I just, when I see that defense at full strength, like, that's a really good defense. And then, yeah, I know that you're probably going to have Mitch Trubisky as your starting quarterback, but Mitch Trubisky, to me, is still an upgrade from what Big Ben was at the point in his career last year. Big Ben last year was, it felt like a charity case still putting him out there on the field. Like, we owe it to him. Like, go try your best, buddy. And
yeah,
see if you can throw 140 yards today.
I don't know if it, though, is going to be Mitch's year. Like, I really think if you draft Kenny Pickett in the first round and Mitch has one bad game, you're putting
Then maybe it is Kenny Pickett, who is also, I think, an upgrade from a year ago Ben Roethlisberger. So, like, that's the biggest. Whoever it is, but Mason still, Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky, Kenny Pickett is an upgrade from Ben Roethlisberger. That defense is really good. And you have the weapons. Like, you have the young tight end, Freiermuth. And I think you have a top five running back in Najee Harris, roughly top five. And, you know, you had George Pickens into a receiver room that was pretty solid with Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson already. I feel like the Steelers somehow scrapped their way to not necessarily being the prettiest team in that division, but somehow being on top or even just tied at the top and winning a tiebreaker. Like, that's how I kind of think it plays out.
Yeah, I understand the upgrade from Big Ben, and he was almost just like a rock standing in the pocket, you know, not really able to throw it deep or anything. But still, there's just that difference of going from a veteran mind to a rookie quarterback who is going to be a little bit more active, can get out of the pocket like Kenny Pickett, you know, and or Mitch Trubisky. If you factor in, he's obviously got a lot more years on him than Kenny Pickett. But if you have Kenny Pickett for a lot of time, you're still going to get those rookie mistakes and trying to get adjusted to the NFL. So, yeah, he's more athletic. He has a potential to be a better option than Ben Roethlisberger, but is his mind going to be ready for a full year to compete for a playoff spot in his first season?
Which is, I mean, also a fair counter. And I feel least confident probably about picking the AFC North because it is so tight. I guess that just also leaves the Browns. Right now, I don't expect much from the Browns, given that Deshaun Watson could be, you know, suspended for an entire year, maybe just 12 games, whatever it is. Even when he comes back, I don't have faith in the Browns. You know, when I look at Deshaun Watson, obviously a really talented quarterback, the skill set's there, but he's also a quarterback that in his last year as a starter went 4-12 and hasn't played in, you know, a competitive football in, you know, almost 2 years by the time he's actually on a field. You know, we really expect him to just be able to jump into the middle of the season and be successful. Yeah, I already thought he was maybe a little bit overrated. I think that DeAndre Hopkins really helped carry him some in his early career, where he would just throw the ball up and let DeAndre Hopkins make a contested catch. So I'm writing off the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, it's just with all those questions, I think a resolution is, like, really close. I think I saw a report that it was either going to be yesterday or today, so we could hear some major news.
Well, it'll probably happen at
12:10. Exactly.
Right after we get off.
It'll happen here in the next hour. We could hear something today, so that'll give us some more clarity, but at least just those first six games, not having him is just like, and then trying to bring him back into the fold mid-season, not, like you said, having played a lot of meaningful games in a while. We saw him for one drive in that preseason game against the Jags, and it did not look good.
No.
I've seen some clips in training camp. Hasn't looked good.
I saw his footwork looked like he forgot how to play football.
Feels like a different player.
He threw a ball, like way over Doesn't the head of a receiver, out of the moxie. Back of the end. It was just weird.
Yeah, so
all around.
I think it just feels like this year is kind of be one of those years. It's like, we're playing for next year if you're the Browns. We're playing for a full year of Deshaun Watson. Get past this craziness and just see what happens in 2023. So I just don't see the Browns being competitive, because that defense is going to have to step up without Deshaun and until he gets ready, and having to play behind Jacoby Brissett. I just feel like it's going to put a lot of pressure on the rest of the team with all this, and it's going to be hard to be competitive in one of the most competitive divisions in football. So,
all right, Sam, your thoughts on the AFC North projected order of finish?
My projected order of finish. I'll go some records too. I've got some records.
There we go.
Here, I've been thinking about this for a little while. I still have the Ravens atop. I have them finishing 11-6. I think that defense is good enough for them to win enough ball games. I agree with what you're saying about Lamar. I don't think that receiver room is talented enough, and I don't think he is talented enough passing wise to be able to rely on just Rashad Bateman, a second-year player coming off of injury, and then Devin Duvernay really is your second option. Mark Andrews is your tight end, one of the best tight ends in the league. But I think that defense is special. They drafted Kyle Hamilton. That secondary is going to be good with them now, with Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey in there. I've got the Steelers finishing second. I'm with you. I'm a big Steelers fan this year. I've got both the Steelers and the Bengals at 10-7, with the Steelers winning that head-to-head tiebreaker to win to be second in the division there. And then I've got the Browns finishing last. I just don't think – I think that Deshaun Watson ruling is going to be a little bit too long for them to get on their feet this season. I think it's going to be a we'll regroup and get to next season type of deal. But
it does just feel like there's too much toxicity at this point.
Yeah, it's just a little bit. I feel like it's a little bit too far gone right now.
Andy, your projected order of finish?
Yeah, I'm going the same. I'm going Ravens with 11 wins. I think the Bengals are at either 10 or 9 right behind them. I think it'll kind of come down to it between those two. Who am I to say this is going to be the first year the Steelers don't go 500 since 2003, so I'm not going to project that. I think they win like 8 games. I think they're right at 500 and third, and then, yeah, the Browns. Browns in last. I think they don't win more than 3 games.
Wow.
Yeah.
3 games.
That's a bold one. Just okay. I mean, I said the Jets are going to finish second yesterday, so what?
True.
I mean, yeah. Who am I to disagree? Like I said, I got the Steelers first, but I think it could be like a first place at 10-7, and I think that you could have. I'm going to have like the Bengals in second place at 9-8, with like the Ravens in third also at 9-8, and then the Browns at like 7-10. That's where I'm kind of at. I think it's just all a logjam, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's reversed. I'm completely wrong the way this division looks, but that's how I see it, and we're running over time. We're going to play Fact or Fiction on the other side. Stay with us here on the Blitz. All right. It's time for a little Fact or Fiction. Going to be bringing it to you every Thursday. So we're going to have Good, Bad, the Ugly Monday, Tuesday drafts. Wednesday, we're working with Cam. We're going to incorporate some kind of trivia. And then Thursdays, a little fact or fiction. So Sam, take it away.
We're going to start off close to home here, talking a little bit about the Tennessee Vols here. Fact or fiction, Josh Heupel will win more SEC games this year than Jimbo Fisher.
That is a really interesting question. I love it. I need to look at A&M's schedule.
A&M this year, obviously they play all of the West, and then their annual East rival is South Carolina, which, by the way, you know they have a trophy for that game that they've tried to incorporate that like no one actually cares about? It's very
A&M
interesting.
A&M in South Carolina?
Yeah.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Hey, more trophies the better. I'm
on
board with that.
I hope that rivalry gets kept together.
Sure.
Texas and Oklahoma come, but they also get Florida at home from the East. So everyone from the West, and then South Carolina and Florida.
And you're at Alabama, at Mississippi State. You get a home game taken away with a neutral side game against Arkansas, but it's in Texas, so a little easier, but Arkansas is not too far from Arlington. So is it fact or fiction, Josh Heupel in Tennessee will have more SEC wins than Jimbo Fisher?
Correct.
In Texas A&M?
Correct.
I want to go fact.
Fact.
If there was like an equal button, I would click equal because I feel like I could see two losses on both at the best, I feel like. Because I feel like A&M's going to drop one at Alabama on the road to Tuscaloosa. I see that Arkansas game really being an early trip-up game. I really feel like that could be a close one, if not an Arkansas win there. And then I feel like, I don't know, it just depends on where Ole Miss and Florida are kind of sitting, where LSU's sitting at the end of the season. I could see maybe a third in there.
I'm going to go ahead and say fiction here. I don't think that Tennessee has more SEC wins than Texas A&M. I do think that we're going to look back at the season at the end of the year, and we're going to say Tennessee is a better team than Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M is an overrated team. But just, you know, when you're having to play Georgia and Alabama and they're only having to play Alabama, you know, when they get South Carolina and Florida from the East, like I just don't see a path to you winning more SEC games than A&M. What I do think happens is you win the exact same amount. So I guess that's kind of what you said. I think you're going to win the same amount of games. I think you're both going to go 6-2 or 5-3, like one of those two.
Tennessee does have the harder SEC schedule, right, for sure.
Because you pencil in, like, you're going to pencil in the loss for A&M at Alabama in my eyes. So pencil in a loss there. And then, yeah, like you said, between Florida going to A&M, Ole Miss going to A&M.
At Mississippi A&M State A&M is
going
scary,
at
too.
Mississippi State. I mean, they lost to Mississippi State last year.
You've got
They've had issues
4 weeks
with Mississippi
in a row.
State.
4 weeks in a row. We got a bye week in there, too, where you're not playing in College Station.
Yeah.
All SEC games.
Right. Which,
that's a long time to go without
actually,
playing,
you know what,
in College Station.
I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to say fact. Tennessee 6-2, A&M 5-3.
I
really don't like A&M all that much this season.
I feel like A&M, they're close, but they're not.
I'll tell you definitively in like four more days once I'm done with my SEC picks too. But yeah, you know what? I'll switch to a fact. Thanks for persuading me.
There we go. All
right. Next one up here. Fact or fiction? Brian Harsin is still the head coach at Auburn by the end of the year.
Fiction. Wow. All the way. I mean, I think that you already saw the boosters basically try to create a story that wasn't true to get him out, that he is not, you know, in a good space with these boosters. I don't even know if he's the coach by the end of the year, because I do think it's going to be Auburn and LSU competing at the, you know, to not finish last in the West this year. Auburn, I mean, you saw the rally in support of Brian Harsin was just like six people standing outside on Toomer's Corner. I just don't think that, you know, people are really all that happy with Brian Harsin at all right now. If they lose that home game to Penn State early, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have a stretch where you go Georgia, Ole Miss, Arkansas, and at Mississippi State. Like,
wow, that's a tough little stretch there to.
I mean, bowl eligibility. You get Mercer, San Jose State, Missouri, and Western Kentucky is like four wins that we think we can give Auburn. But you know, for them to find two more won't necessarily be the easiest thing in the world. I think what ends up happening actually is that Matt Rhule gets fired by the Panthers and Auburn hires Matt Rhule.
Wow, those are some bold predictions.
Which is terrifying, because I think he'd probably do really well there. Yeah. Actually, not bad, because we want Auburn to be good to go up against Alabama.
I'm going to go fiction. I think we forget that last year that Auburn was 6-2 to start the season. Obviously, they had a really tough backstretch where they lost five in a row. They lost three games by a combined total of 10 points. So they were really just a couple of bad defensive stands at the end of games from winning nine games last season, and that's including a bowl game. So I think you survive all that turmoil in the offseason. It was a crazy offseason for him, and he survives it. What if Zach Calzada ends up, you know, being a good candidate this year, and he ends up playing well? I mean, he beat Bama last year. I know he wasn't putting
like
up
Zach
the numbers.
Calzada.
I'm just saying.
Like, Zach Calzada. I'm just saying. I don't know. Like, you can't convince me on Zach Calzada.
I'm not trying to convince.
Like, TJ Finley.
But I feel like.
I get that their performance wasn't as bad as it was made out to be. Like, if I were in charge of Auburn, I don't think I would necessarily be firing Brian Harsin after a second year.
I just feel like
I think
if
the culture
survive.
Fit is so bad, and his relationships with, you know, some pretty important people there are just so damaged that.
It definitely is thin ice, but I feel like you survive that nightmare that was around February. You get to this point, you start to maybe pull through in some late game scenarios. You win more than six games this year, and you have fun doing it. I mean, I don't see a reason why you'd fire him in year two if things stay cleaner than they did last year.
All right, well, good round of fact or fiction there. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. I know you got some good ones, Sam. Next week, I'll make sure I time us out better. I'll get us on a better schedule, and that way we'll be able to extend it a little bit longer. But good job there, fact or fiction. Wrap the show up with our best bets on the other side. Wrapping up this Thursday edition of The Blitz. Ending the show like we always do with our best bets.
You're
great job tonight, or last night.
3-0 from the squad.
Yeah, really, really great work all around. All three bets won. The Padres got off to a real hot start and then let the Marlins like load the bases a couple times, but they got out of the jams. Good picks all around. Hopefully you guys are just parlaying them every night and we're just all winning. But I'm 3-0 now. I'm both of y'all 2-1. Boys are hot. Let's see if we can keep it rolling tonight. Sam, what's your best bet for the day?
Tonight I'm going to go with the Chicago White Sox at +110, playing the Houston Astros. We got a pretty decent pitching matchup here with Lucas Giolito against Luis Garcia. I think this has just been a back-and-forth series, and I'm riding the White Sox tonight, thinking that those bats can get hot against Luis Garcia.
I agree. Garcia has not looked great.
He's been a little bit shaky.
He gave up four runs, eight hits against the A's in his last start.
He's been a little shaky. I'm hoping that this White Sox lineup can get it together. You never know what's going to come out of their team, but I'm going to ride with the White Sox at plus 110.
All right. White Sox at plus 110. Andy, what do you got for tonight?
We've got NFL preseason back. A little Thursday night action. Between the Bears and the Seahawks. A lot of some turmoil with the Seahawks. Drew Locke tested positive for COVID. We won't see him tonight. I believe we'll see Justin Fields for the Bears. I believe the Seahawks are current favorites in this game. But I think I'm going to go with the Bears here. I mean, obviously, it's just so hard to project preseason games sometimes, but I think we see a healthy dose of Valus Jones Jr. as well. Wouldn't be surprised if Valus got in the end zone.
Valus?
Yeah.
In the end zone.
I think Valus is going to get a lot of work tonight.
You want to throw in a Valus anytime touchdown in there, Andy?
I don't even know. Do they have those in the preseason?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
If we're doing a best bet, mine is just Bears tonight.
So you're taking their money line, or you're taking them plus 3.5?
Just Bears. Well, whatever.
I need you to pick one.
The Bears win the game.
Okay, cool. Bears to win the game. You know what? That was also my bet, and I'm not going to go against it. We're just going to have the same bet. We're just going to be in it together. So if you're parlaying our picks, it's just a two-teamer tonight. But I also like the Bears' money line, and you're going to get some good value on that because the Bears are underdogs. So are the White Sox tonight. The Bears are 3.5-point underdogs. I thought that they did some good things last week. They beat the Chiefs. I think that they're just also, you have to determine who's more invested in winning in the preseason sometimes, and I think it's the Bears. I think that you're going to see them play Justin Fields a decent amount. Like, you know, you have a lot of guys still competing to be in rotations, so you're going to have quality players playing a little bit longer. I like the Bears tonight as well in Seattle. So me and Andy both on the Bears.
If Vela scores, I get 2 points.
If Vela scores, you get 2 points. And Sam on the White Sox. It's a Chicago kind of night for the boys. But hey, thanks for tuning in here on this Thursday. I hope y'all have a great rest of your day. But for Charlie, for Andy, and for Sam, it's been another edition of The Blitz. John Reed and the boys up next with Talk Sports. Stay locked in to Fan Run Radio. Comes to my door.